All right, this show brought to you in part by SimpliSafe. If you have 30 minutes, you never have to worry about break-ins ever again. Just go to simplisafe.com/Adam, get all the sensors you need, all the help you need as well to set it up. Custom systems going to show up post-haste at simplisafe.com/Adam. Well, in this second half, we have the interesting and controversial Piers Morgan. First, let me tell you about a quick podcast study here. As you know by now, we all do our very best to align the right sponsors to the podcast. It's a lot of work behind the scenes, and I'm incredibly grateful for your support. We're currently running a quick survey at podcaststudy.com, and we're giving the first 150 people a $10 digital Amazon gift card as an incentive to complete the survey. The information we hear from you about our sponsors is incredibly important to the show, and we can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes to help us out. I mean, come on, it's free. Now cut us a break. Upon completion of the survey, you'll be asked to include your email address, and we will send the first 150 people a $10 gift card from Amazon. Go to podcaststudy.com, and thank you again for helping our show and our sponsors.
Adam Carolla's sixth book and audiobook. Everything reminds me of something. Advice, answers, but no apologies.
Friends with Benefits is like solar panels and recycling programs. It seems great on paper, but never quite works out. And benefits is the greatest euphemism for sex ever. A job with good benefits means a dental plan or a vending machine with 1950s prices. But you don't get to have sex with the receptionist. If the benefits that HR departments provide were the benefits a Friends with Benefits provides, we wouldn't be in the middle of the Great Resignation. And the country's unemployment numbers would be negative. The Friends with Benefits phrase was most definitely coined by a man. If Friends with Benefits were called what it really is, plowing someone when I get blackout drunk that I don't like enough to take on vacation, it probably wouldn't get as much traction.
Everything reminds me of something. Wherever finer books are sold, order yours now at adamcarolla.com.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but get on mandate. Get it on. And welcome to the Adam Carolla Show. We have a special one-on-one episode with Piers Morgan today. He's got a TV show. It's Piers Morgan Uncensored. It's broadcast on Talk TV weeknights, and it's available on YouTube. And you can find it as a podcast as well, and shoot him a tweet at Piers Morgan. Good to see you, Piers.
Thank you, Adam.
Let's see. I think you came into prominence, at least here in the United States, for sure, in 2011 when you took over for Larry King. Famously, I went on a rant on a local Good Day morning show out here. We went over it, and your show, no harm, no foul, which is nice that you have a sense of humor about it.
I think you called me a chubby guy in his 50s. He should be drummed out of the country. And my only objection really, and a blowhard, but my only objection really was that I was still in my 40s when you said that. So it was more the age issue that offended me.
I know. As it turns out, I think I'm older than you, depending on when your birthday is. But mine's just passed. So, Piers, come to the United States. You know, you start off in the UK. You come to the United States. You do Larry King's, or you take over for Larry King for about 3 or 4 years. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was pretty extraordinary experience. I mean, I had a bit of history on American television. I was actually a judge on America's Got Talent for 6 years. And then I competed in Celebrity Apprentice, the first series of that with Donald Trump as the host, obviously. And I won that, which is how I got to know Trump. And it was off the back of that, really, that I landed the, for me, what seemed like a dream job of replacing the great Larry King at CNN. And it was a fantastic, you know, nearly 4 years. I did about 1,200 shows. It was incredibly exhilarating a lot of the time. I loved all the big interviews I did with people. I got into some pretty ferocious debates, notably about gun control. And I think that created a few cultural issues between me and a lot of Americans who were like, well, who is this British guy coming over here telling us how to lead our lives? I totally got that. But I wasn't going to compromise my view of issues like gun control and other issues of that kind, just to, you know, to pretend I was someone I wasn't. So it was an interesting experience, fascinating, enjoyable, challenging, tough at parts, and ultimately, I think, a little bit of a culture clash where probably it was best for everybody that I came home for a bit.
Can we agree, and I don't want to speak for you, so if you disagree, feel free to disagree. When we go back to that time more than a decade ago now that you took over for Larry King, we were in a place as a culture where we went, that guy doesn't like guns. I'm a gun guy, not me personally, but let's just say a viewer. So I don't like that guy. And some of that happened with you on a myriad of different subjects. We're now in a place where I go Piers Morgan, Bill Maher, Charles Barkley, Sharon Osbourne. I don't know if I agree with them on many subjects, Ben Shapiro, but I agree that they should speak their mind, and thus I look at them as an ally, which is much different than we were a decade ago. Now it's like I may disagree with Bill Maher about 71% of the things he says. I still count on him as a friend and an ally.
Yeah, I completely agree. And in fact, I feel the same way about someone like Tucker Carlson. Now, my show's airing Piers Morgan Uncensored on Fox Nation in the States. And so I've joined the Fox family. And one of them is Tucker, who's obviously very controversial and polarizing. But I would probably agree with 70% of what he says. And not least of all, about my real bête noire, and I think this is the same whether you're Ben Shapiro or Bill Maher or probably you, Adam. Doesn't matter whether you're on the left or right or wherever you see yourself. I think we can all probably come together, the group I just mentioned, and say that we find the kind of woke insanity of this cancel culture mentality completely ridiculous in supposed democratic society. So I think that we've reached points of agreement, even if we come from historically slightly different political positions.
Yes, it feels much more authentic now in that you're saying everyone has the right to their opinion, and I'm now at the point where if you're expressing your opinion and that is in fact your opinion, then I'm a fan of yours regardless of whether I agree with your opinion or not. But you brought up Tucker Carlson. I know Tucker well. It's funny that he gets trotted out after everything that goes wrong anytime and all the arrows and knives get pointed at him. And first off, philosophically or mathematically, you know, our nation has 330 million people in it. His nightly audience is about 3 million people, which is impressive, but it's still just 1% of our society, essentially, or less. Or maybe he gets a 3.3 and it's exactly 1%. What do you make of every Democratic politician saying Tucker Carlson is poisoning the mind of America when he's speaking to 1% of America?
Well, I think it's disingenuous, but I also think that they need a bogeyman. And they had Trump, and since Trump's been out of office, it's Tucker Carlson. And I think that's one of the problems that the left has, and I would say the liberal skewed media in America, is they over-demonize these people like Tucker Carlson, like Donald Trump and others. And when you over-demonize it, then you dilute, first of all, any impact to your opposition because it becomes so overbearing and constant. And secondly, you sort of fuel the people you're trying to demonize. You make them more popular, not less popular. So it's a rather self-defeating strategy. But I really do feel he's become the new Trump. You know, it's like when in doubt, blame it on Tucker Carlson. Before it was when in doubt, blame it on Donald Trump. And if Trump was to win again, they would revert back to blaming him for everything. Whereas I think what America needs is less blaming from everybody, actually, of everybody else, and more policies which are actually going to improve a lot of Americans. I mean, I think that's what people are crying out for. And it's this sort of weird thing where personality, politics, and media, it's all driven by assessment of people's personalities. But actually what America needs are people who can get stuff done and fix the country. Same problem we have in the UK.
It's also a weird thing as a politician and as just you know, everyone who's involved with the progressive movement. You just want to hand your fate off to Tucker Carlson. Like, that's it. Like, it's almost like saying, well, I run a restaurant, but the restaurant across the street is ruining our restaurant. And you go, well, what are they doing? Well, they're just serving right. food that people want. And you go, okay, well, why don't you work on your food? Yeah. It's like, I can't. We got to shut them down over there. And it's like, you do? Or how about you just make a taco that people want?
I think that's a brilliant analogy, because actually all the energy that you're committing to trying to demonize the restaurant opposite yours could be going into making yours a better restaurant. And I feel the same way when the Democrats go after Trump, is if they'd spent less time just obsessing about Trump and more time focusing on policies and, you know, doing what they felt would improve the country and the people's and the people who live in the country, then they would have done a lot better. And I think this has been one of the problems with politics in America, in Britain, and other countries around the world, is that if in the end you obsess with what the other side is doing all the time, to the detriment of what you would actually want to do or what you are doing, you're making a massive strategic error. You know, the best leaders of all time have been the ones who had a single-minded belief in what they think is right and pursue that path. They don't really worry too much or get knocked off course too much by an obsession about what the other side is doing. They don't care. And that can apply in sport. It can apply in entertainment. It can apply in politics. It can apply in life. It's like the best leaders really don't think too much about other people. They just lead.
So you had famously the whole dust up with Meghan Markle and Sharon Osbourne and that whole situation that I'm still having trouble. I'm having trouble processing even what went on. Like, we in this country will shit can people for next to nothing. We just will. Something is wrong with us. I don't know what happened to us. And somehow the left always seems to be applauding and cheering this on when they were originally, when I was growing up, they were the progressive, free thinking, free to be you and me, let your freak flag fly, say whatever you want. And all of a sudden they've turned into McCarthyites. But that situation, can you kind of walk us through it? Because I found it particularly egregious.
Well, I think it was very egregious in many ways. And what happened to Sharon Osbourne in the wake of it was even worse. So what happened to me was that I went on air on the morning show I was doing over here for ITV, one of the commercial networks, the morning after the infamous Oprah Winfrey wine-a-thon, where Meghan and Harry spray gunned the royal family, spray gunned the monarchy, came out with all sorts of incendiary allegations involving race and mental illness and so on. And I found a lot of what was coming out of their mouths completely disingenuous. I also knew immediately that some of the things they were saying were completely untrue. So Meghan Markle claimed the Archbishop of Canterbury, who's the senior churchman in the Church of England in the UK, had secretly married them 3 days before their global wedding. But if he'd actually secretly married them in their back garden, as she claimed, he would have committed a criminal offence and been sent to prison. So I knew immediately a lot of this stuff was untrue. And I went on air, as I used to most mornings, and said, I just don't believe a word she's saying. I'm sorry. I think that from my immediate knowledge of what she's saying that's not right, I find it very hard to believe anything she's saying. Other people on the show, my co-hosts, guests we had on, all said the opposite. They all believed everything that she was saying, and I respected their right to believe it. But to my astonishment, there was this huge campaign that began online to have me cancelled and fired for disbelieving Meghan Markle. I was accused of belittling her mental health claims. I was accused of diminishing her racism claims, even though all I said was, I want to see some evidence of this racism that she talks about, because she was very scant on detail. And in fact, as we sit here now, a year later, still no details have come forward about this supposed racism. So I felt, as a journalist, my job was to at least be skeptical. But it would appear from the mob that came for me online and then began to intimidate my employers that I was expected to toe the narrative that you had to believe this. It was her lived experience, and therefore I was compelled to believe it, which I find a ridiculous notion. Anyway, the next day, I was basically told I had to apologize or I would have to lose my job, which I'd done for 5 years pretty successfully. We trebled the ratings. It was on fire as a show. And I said, well, why would I apologize? It's something I genuinely believe. And it then turned out, after I left that day, that Meghan Markle had written personally to the boss of ITV, my employers, demanding my head on a plate. And she was successful because ITV put me in a position of either you apologize for what you believe or you have to leave. So I left and I've got no problem with that. I thought that was the right principle thing to do and was, you know, supporting my own right to free speech and my right to have an opinion. But then the next day, Sharon Osbourne on the Talk in America, all she had done was tweet that I was entitled to my opinion. She didn't even say she agreed with it. And she then got jumped on the show by Cheryl Underwood, who's the black co-host on The Talk at the time, who accused her of basically supporting and endorsing someone who'd said racist things. Me. No, I'd never said anything racist, obviously. And when she was challenged, Cheryl Underwood, to say, well, what had I said that was racist? She couldn't produce anything. But it then turned out that what she meant was by disbelieving Meghan Markle and particularly her claims of racism, I was therefore de facto a racist. So Sharon then loses her job. So you've got two high-profile presenters, one in Britain, one in America, who effectively lose their jobs for just having opinions on shows where they were specifically employed for having opinions. That was literally, I mean, in Sharon's case, the show was called The Talk. She was paid to have opinions. I was on a show where I was hired to have opinions. But when I expressed an honestly held one, I had to lose my job. And Sharon then lost hers. I thought the whole thing was completely outrageous. And as you rightly said earlier, the complete opposite, really, of liberalism. You know, liberalism used to be that you would be tolerant and understand that people had a right to other opinions, and you would respect that, albeit you would disagree. Now, if anyone deviates from this kind of very ultra-woke view of life, they have to be shamed, abused, terrorized online, and lose their jobs, and hopefully, in their eyes, be cancelled forever. And it's a very insidious thing for a democracy to allow this to be going on.
Agreed. And, you know, also what we do, at least in this country, I don't know if you guys do it over there in the UK, but we take a woman of color like Kamala Harris and we put her in a position of being vice president of the United States. And then if you take umbrage with things she says, then that makes you a racist or sexist, which is not a tenable position.
Right.
You can't take people, put them in very high positions or have them be talk show hosts and say, I disagree with you, person of color who sits across from me, and I disagree with Meghan Markle. Now you're fighting off the racism accusations or allegations. How's that mathematically possible? How would our society move forward? How does that work? So you can just take someone of a certain group, what maybe it's sexual proclivities, and you just put them in a position of power. And then if you raise your hand and say, I disagree with this policy, then it's because you're homophobic. That's an impossible position to put a society in.
You see
it,
don't you? Well, yeah, you see it, I think, most glaringly right now with the trans debate. You know, I've always supported trans rights to fairness and equality as I would for anybody. And I've been very outspoken about that over the years. But when you see what's happening in women's sport and you see trans women demolishing women born to female biological bodies in swimming pools in, you know, big events, and you realize there's a new unfairness and inequality being created by that, then obviously we should, as a society, be saying, well, hang on, let's debate this. Let's work out a way through this. Clearly, this is not fair. And you can't promote trans fairness and equality at the expense of damaging women's rights to the same. But if you try and do that, particularly in America, you get immediately branded transphobic. And, you know, you see Dave Chappelle, who's a brilliant comedian. Even if he tries to tell a joke about the trans community, he ends up being attacked on stage. And they try and cancel him from Netflix. And yet he tells jokes about everybody. So is the trans community saying, A, you can't debate any of the issues that involve us, even if it impinges on the rights of other communities? And secondly, you're not allowed to tell any jokes about our community. Well, where does that leave us, Assad? You're a comedian, Adam. I mean, the moment whole communities start saying, you cannot joke about us, we're off limits, comedy basically starts to die.
Well, you know, I've always said that sort of as it pertained to COVID, the comedians immediately went silent on all things COVID. And traditionally, comedians push back against whatever the norm is or whatever the whatever's out there. So whatever is on everyone's mind, then you have to go, okay, what is my sort of alternate angle to whatever it is being pushed out there in the zeitgeist? But everyone was silent because they were all scared of being canceled. And I always said, once you get to the comedians, you've gotten to everybody. You know, it's easy to silence people in the corporate setting. It's easy to silence, you know, school teachers or bus drivers. But when you get to comedians, you know, we've hit a saturation point. You know, this is a problem. Most comedians, if you go back and look at it, there weren't any, almost any mainstream comedians who would be willing to push back against any of the conventions of COVID, most of which turned out to be incorrect. And that's very telling. And also, as I would say to all the comedians in Hollywood and California, I would tell them, you think Donald Trump is the man. Donald Trump is not the man. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is the one who shut down California. He's the man. Now push back against the man. None of them would do it. It's very kind of disheartening.
No, because it didn't suit their narrative to do that. It didn't suit their tribal instincts. Even when they could see he was doing something wrong, they still wouldn't do it because it was against what their tribe wanted them to do. And the tribe being the woke, hard left liberal crowd in Hollywood, where like, we know this can't be right. We know it's not fair. I mean, I thought the most ridiculous thing I've witnessed, I went to the Super Bowl and I was told we'd have to wear masks all day in 85 degree heat, even though it was an outdoor stadium. And I was not looking forward to it at all. And I got there, 100,000 people. And bear in mind that the schools were still making all the kids wear masks the next day. But everyone in that crowd was maskless, including a huge number of liberal celebrities who've been very vocal about the urgent need to wear masks, even as the pandemic began to fade, and knowing that the schools were still enforcing it on kids. And I thought the total hypocrisy of that was so glaring and sort of typical, sadly, of a lot of the hypocrisy over these issues. And you're right. I mean, if that had been any kind of Republican governor, for example, in California, he would have been ripped to pieces. But because he was on the left, they didn't dare do it because he's one of them.
Yeah, you know, people ask me sometimes where I think we're heading. And I'm very curious as to what your input is on this in the United States and in the UK. I've been saying for the last several years, safe spaces and octagons, meaning half the people are going harder into this bizarre sort of safe space world. And the other half are going, fuck it, I'm putting a lift kit on my Jeep and I'm going hunting. Like there is a large group of people. I always say you can see it in California by the vehicles. Half the people are driving Teslas. The other half the people are driving 4x4 Jeeps and trucks with lift kits and gun racks and brush guards. And like the other half is physically going, I'm not going with this. I'm going another direction. I'm going to do a Tough Mudder and get into the octagon and going to go out four wheeling this weekend. Seems to me that we're just going in different directions. What's your take?
I just think it comes back again to what I said about tribalism. I just think, and it's fueled a lot by social media. You know, I mean, it's obviously completely insane when you see people on their own in their own car wearing a mask, but they've somehow, probably following all the wrong people on Twitter, convinced themselves that's the only way to stay completely safe. And yet they're driving a car that could crash into another car at any moment. You know, nothing is completely safe in life. And my view about coronavirus was the moment we had vaccines that worked and therapeutics, which stopped a lot of people dying, that's the time to get on with life. You can't be paralyzed by a pandemic when it ceases to be a pandemic. You can't be at the behest of a virus when you know so much more about it and realize you know how to take drugs to combat it. So I just feel like we're living in a world where people have slightly lost their minds because they are so determined in a very self-righteous way just to follow the path that they've been, you know, told to do by people they follow on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it may be. And I don't think that used to be the case. 25 years ago, before social media, it wasn't as entrenched as this. People were, I think, more inclined to change their minds if they heard a good argument. They're also more inclined to listen to good arguments and then go and have a drink with the person that they disagreed with. That was always my way when I grew up in England. You'd go down the pub, you'd have a good old tear up about a few issues, and you'd have a few beers together. Now that doesn't really happen. People fall out with friends. They disown friends for having different views about Trump or COVID or what Brexit, whatever it is. They fall out with family members. You know, I've got family members who are very left-wing, family members who are very right-wing, and I love them all equally, and I like debating with them, and I agree with some of them about some things. Normally, I agree with half of what the left family members are saying, half of what the right are saying, and disagree with them both equally as well. So, you know, I tend to disagree with anyone who's quite hard left or right about a lot of things. But the idea that I would disown them because they have honestly held different opinions, I would find completely absurd. But that is where we're going as a society. And I simply say to people who are that way inclined, what are you doing? When did you lose the ability to listen to other people's opinions and at least respect their right to have one, even if you don't agree? When did you get in your head that the only way to deal with this is to cancel? You know, it almost goes back, Adam, to 2,000 years ago when we lived in real tribes and you never ventured out of your tribes. Everyone in your tribe dressed the same, spoke the same, had the same attitudes, ate the same food, you know, did the same kind of stuff because you never left your tribe. And then when you ventured out of the tribe, slowly but surely, as the years went on and you found other tribes who dressed differently, talked differently, had different attitudes, ate differently and so on, both tribes concluded in that moment of discovery that there were other tribes out there, that the only way to resolve this was to kill each other. And it's kind of where we've got to 2,000 years later. You know, on social media, it's basically people just trying to kill each other all day long, albeit verbally. But even in reality, when they meet each other, it's so hostile, so toxic, and so antithetical to liberalism and to a democratic society.
What's your take on Trump? I did Celebrity Apprentice. You did Celebrity Apprentice. You won. I didn't. I have thoughts about Trump. You know him fairly well. I'm curious what your thoughts are about Trump, and then what are your thoughts about Trump derangement syndrome, which is people that just go nuts for Trump. Where do you think that comes from? And what I will preface it by saying, I think it's less about Trump and more about what's in you that somehow this thing is triggered. He somehow triggers certain types of people to have this sort of derangement syndrome. But what's your overall take on Trump?
Well, he's a fascinating character. There's been no one like him in political life ever, really. And I would say he's, you know, completely unique, to which my 10-year-old daughter once said to me, there is such a thing as being too unique, Dada. And I knew what she meant when talking about Trump. So he's a one-off. He's somebody where the rhetoric, I've always felt, is far worse than the reality. You actually study what Trump did as president. Until we got to the end with his refusal to accept the result of the election, which I think is damaging to democracy, and the appalling scenes on January the 6th that then sort of flowed from that. And I felt some of his handling of the pandemic was pretty awful. You know, he shouldn't have been pontificating from the podium about, you know, mad ways to treat yourself. It was irresponsible. But actually, a lot of the other things that he did when he was president, if you could remove the incendiary triggering rhetoric, which he used to do quite deliberately, knowing it would fire up his base and completely wind up the opposition, a lot of it was fairly mainstream Republican presidential stuff. In fact, if anything, you could almost categorize him as a moderate. And that's why it's going to be very interesting, I think, to see what happens now, because with the Democrats self-imploding and Joe Biden looking like he's asleep at the wheel, if they get a real shellacking in the midterms and Trump is still the favorite to be the next Republican nominee, he could become, I think, only the second president in history to get reelected, having missed out on a term. And I think that he wants to do that. and I wouldn't put it past him. So I find Trump, he's been a very loyal friend to me, but he can also be pretty vengeful if he thinks you cross him. I interviewed him recently for my show, and he felt I'd stitched him up over a 30-second promo. I don't think I did, but he did. Rattled off a series of furious statements and so on. But I suspect if I see him again, he'll be fine. He's like that. He blows hot and cold. But he is a guy who gets stuff done. You may not like everything he does, but he gets stuff done. And I think that a lot of people I know have Trump as a kind of guilty pleasure. You know, they don't really want to be seen to be thinking like they like him, but they quietly like him. And I think that that's part of his appeal, part of his success. And, you know, if you travel as I do, not just to the coasts, but you travel into middle America and you go to Florida, Texas, places like that, there's a huge amount of support for him even now. He understands how middle America thinks in a way that I think a lot of politicians on the East and West Coast haven't got a clue. So I think in totality, I'd say he's a weird phenomenon. I've always got on with him pretty well, albeit with occasionally a little rocky point in the road. But I would not put it past him to get reelected. And the interesting question then, would he pivot to a more moderate kind of president? He did say to me it would depend entirely on how he got treated. He felt he got completely abused by the media 24/7, which is true. And they did that, I think, for commercial reasons. They were all making tons of money from constant Trump bashing. I think he's right to say that. I think the Russia collusion nonsense that went on for 2 years and dominated the New York Times and CNN and so on and turned out to be nonsense, I thought that was pretty corrosive and very damaging to Trump's whole view of the media. Now, he's not blameless. He's flawed in many ways. He says a lot of bad stuff. But again, I just come back. My feeling about Trump is if you actually analyze what he does more than what he says, he's a far less antagonistic character.
I completely agree. We have this thing in America where we're like, I'd like to have a beer with that guy. So we've all kind of decided that we'd much rather have a beer with Barack Obama than a beer with Donald Trump, who doesn't even drink beer. But we just decided I'd like to have a beer with that guy. My answer to those people is you're never fucking going to have a beer with either one of them. Why don't you just support the guy who has policies that actually work or might benefit the country, seeing how the beer thing is off the table.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think if Trump had been given more credit when he deserved it, and I wrote about 120 columns for the DailyMail.com through his presidency, of which about half were positive and half were critical, which I thought was a fairer assessment than the ones most people in the media were either completely against him or completely in the tank for him. There was no kind of middle ground or objective journalism about him, really. And I felt that that was a fairer picture. And I think if the media had been able to get away from its constant Trump-bashing obsession and given him a bit more credit when he deserved it, then it might have calmed him down a bit with his constant attacks on fake news media and so on. I don't know that. But my gut feeling is that he would have been less angry all the time at the way he felt he was being unfairly treated. So I can see both sides. I mean, Trump would do stuff to deliberately wind up his opponents, including in the media, and they returned fire with great glee because it suited them either politically or commercially. But it'll be very interesting. If he gets reelected, and he might well, I'd say it's 50-50. If he got reelected as to whether he could pivot and whether the media would learn its lesson from before that actually over-demonizing him is self-defeating.
Well, let's talk about the media for a second because I've wondered out loud many times in the last few years, what are they doing? And you're in the media, so you understand this. So what happens, and I'll just speak of our media. Somebody, Joe Rogan says ivermectin, and then CNN says it's horse paste. It's only used in, you know, on farms. And I think to myself, well, they know better. I mean, it's this information is easily discernible, or you can go deeper. You can go to like Hunter Biden's laptop. They dismiss it as, you know, Russian propaganda. It's pretty definable. You could find out as CNN has the resources to first be agnostic, say, huh, we don't know if it's real or not. We got to look into this. And then they could look into it and then they could substantiate it or not. The fact that they choose to define ivermectin as horse paste, or that Hunter Biden's laptop is planted by a Russian operative. Now, I get back to something I like to play called stupid or liar. I think in this case, it's liar, because the information is out there and pretty, and the fact that you didn't even try to find the information seems to me that you're lying. How much credibility, how much was their credibility damaged in this chapter? And did they make a deal with the devil, and will they ever get it back? And, you know, I'm interested in your perspective, because that's your business.
Yeah, well, I think CNN in particular, going so completely obsessive anti-Trump, I think was very damaging for their brand, because that was not their brand to be so nakedly politically partisan, for example. And I think that their ratings issues that they've had since Trump left office speak for themselves. You know, they were reveling in the big ratings they got from constantly hammering him. But in the meantime, I know quite a few CNN viewers who couldn't watch it anymore because they felt it was so partisan and not why they watched CNN. If they wanted to see that, they'd watch MSNBC, or if they were on the right, they'd watch Fox. So I think the ones who really went full out Trump bashing, I think did damage their brand, because, you know, a lot of Americans didn't share that view. I think the Hunter Biden laptop suppression of that story by social media and mainstream media was a complete disgrace and damaged all of them. I mean, the idea that Twitter removed the New York Post Twitter account for 2 weeks, I think it was, because they refused to let them promote a story that has now turned out to be completely true, was an appalling suppression of free speech by Twitter, which I know that some of their executives have now expressed regret for, but that could have tipped the election. You know, Trump, I think, is completely wrong to say he had the election stolen from him. And he got very angry when I said that to him, based on rigged voting. There's no hard evidence to support his claims. But in relation to the potential impact of if the mainstream media and social media had allowed that Hunter Biden laptop story to be properly investigated and examined and given due prominence, that could have tipped the election Trump's way. All the polling suggests that. So I felt that that was a really damaging time for the media, and the way that, again, CNN, New York Times and others just dismissed that story as Russian misinformation. And now they calmly say, actually, it was all true, as if, well, that doesn't really matter. Actually, it does matter. He genuinely potentially affected the result of an election through your failure to just be journalists. You know, my message to all of them, just be journalists. You haven't got to be in the tank for anybody. Left or right, just be journalists and get to the truth. But they like to see it as their truth now. And that's where I think, for journalists in particular, that's an incredibly damaging mindset. You know, the Meghan Markle, my truth mindset, where facts don't really matter if you've decided your version of them is the truth. That's just not acceptable.
No, I completely agree. And I say constantly, I find it curious that the LA Times or the New York Times even endorse a candidate. You know, I live in LA. The LA Times will endorse the Democratic candidate for mayor or for governor or whom, the presidency. They will endorse them, and then they will then write articles about whoever the Republican is that's running against them, calling them a racist. And I think to myself, well, I don't believe it, because you've endorsed a side and now you're going about right. your business. I don't yeah. know why you would run a news publication and do that. I don't know why you'd be an umpire in a baseball game and endorse not, one not of the journalism. Teams and then go behind the plate and call balls and strikes. Yeah. I don't believe you.
It's not journalism, and it shouldn't be journalism. That's not what journalists should do. But when you're so obviously partisan, how can people trust everything else you do? It's obviously going to be skewed towards your preferred candidate or your preferred politician. And that was one of the problems with Trump and the over-demonization. It helped him. It fueled him. And he got 10 million more votes in the 2020 election than he got in the 2016 election. What a staggering achievement. He got the second highest number of votes second time round in the history of American elections. And that was, I think, entirely down to the over-demonization of him by his political opponents and the media.
Where do you, just because you do follow the news, what do you think the exposure for President Biden is vis-a-vis the laptop and, you know, Durham and Hunter Biden and that situation? Do you have any insights to that?
Well, I just think we should find out. I think the newspapers and the TV news should do their jobs rather than dismissing it all as Russian disinformation in the same way they fueled bogus Russian collusion over the 2016 election. Just do your jobs. Go and find out what the truth is. If there is a direct money trail between Hunter Biden, dodgy companies in Ukraine paying him vast amounts of money, you know, Chinese contacts as well, while his father's vice president. And if there is a money trail that leads any of that money to Joe Biden, that's an impeachable offense potentially. I don't know if that's there, but I certainly know you're not going to find it if you don't look. And I certainly know if it was Donald Trump Jr., they'd all be pulling out all the stops and putting all their resources into finding out. So again, it comes back to bias. Journalists should not be biased.
I agree.
They should be fair-minded and they should go after everybody in the same way.
I misspoke. I said Durham with the Hunter Biden. Durham's working on the Steele dossier and Russian collusion and Russia. My mind's starting to swim. All right, we'll take a very quick break. We'll come right back with more Piers Morgan right after this. Back with Piers Morgan. It's got a TV show, Piers Morgan Uncensored.
Adam, can I just...
Yes.
Adam.
Yes.
I'm really sorry, but I've got all my guys on my floor. I'm supposed to be doing my own show in a minute. So I'm going to have to wrap it, I'm afraid.
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. There are many ways to support a healthy brain. Learn a new language, take power naps. Oh, yeah, you're speaking to the choir. There's also BetterHelp online therapy. Look, I think it's pretty abundantly evident in today's day and age that you need some good physical health, but how about a little something for the brain as well? BetterHelp online therapy, offering video, phone, and even live chat only therapy sessions, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. More affordable than in-person therapy, get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours and take care of yourself. It's a topsy-turvy time we're living in. Let's take care of our emotional side with BetterHelp. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Corolla. That's BetterHelp.com/Corolla. Well, I just want to tell you about a quick podcast study here. As you know by now, we all do our very best to align the right sponsors to the podcast. It's a lot of work behind the scenes, and I'm incredibly grateful for your support. We're currently running a quick survey at podcaststudy.com. And we're giving the first 150 people a $10 digital Amazon gift card as an incentive to complete the survey. The information we hear from you about our sponsors is incredibly important to the show, and we can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes to help us out. I mean, come on, it's free. Now cut us a break. Upon completion of the survey, you'll be asked to include your email address, and we will send the first 150 people a $10 gift card from Amazon. Go to podcaststudy.com and thank you again for helping our show and our sponsors. Do you own, do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Adam Carolla's sixth book and audiobook. Everything reminds me of something. Advice, answers, but no apologies.
Gender issues are starting to creep into government regulations, too. Last year, Governor Newsom, in his never-ending quest to find shit to focus on other than homelessness, traffic, wildfires, and housing prices, found time to sign into law a bill requiring stores to offer sections of gender-neutral toys. aren't there already tons of gender-neutral toys? I'm pretty sure Monopoly doesn't give a shit if you have a dick or a pussy. The game pieces are already gender-neutral. There's a race car, a hat, and an iron. Not a vagina or testicles figurine among them. Hey, Newsom, a little less wokus and a little more focus. That's just what we need. A government bureaucrat going into businesses and making sure the toy aisles have gender-neutral offerings. Though I did come up with a fantastic name for said section, the androgynous zone.
Everything reminds me of something. Wherever finer books are sold, order yours now at adamcarolla.com.
All right, we're back with Piers Morgan, the TV show Piers Morgan Uncensored, and you can find that on Fox Nation as well. We've had a little scheduling issue. We're going to go a little bit shorter than we normally do because Piers has his show to do, and I hope we can pick up this conversation and continue it sooner than later, Piers.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to. It's been really interesting. I think we share a lot of similar views about all this stuff. I think ultimately you and I would just like the media to get back to doing what they should do, which is be, you know, nonpartisan observers of what's going on in the world and getting to the truth. That's really what we want from all journalists. And I think we want politicians to be more honest too. And, you know, and we want the electorate to be more fair-minded, to give credit where it's due, to criticize where it's due, but to tolerate other people's opinions. I mean, ultimately, that's the bedrock of any democratic society. And if you lose that, you lose democracy.
I agree. And I'll add one more thing, which is in lieu of that not happening as fast as we'd like, the public should be a little more discerning as well. When CNN and or Twitter says Hunter Biden laptop, bogus Russian collusion, raise an eyebrow, public, and then take a little deeper dive into it. Don't just believe everything everyone's been telling you, right or left. If you hear something, you unfortunately have to put on your fedora with the press credential in it now. Sadly, we've all been deputized to become cub reporters because now when I hear a story, right or left, I think, oh, now I have to investigate. It's a sad, sad place we're all in.
Totally agree.
The Jordan Harbinger Show, a different kind of sponsor for this episode. The Jordan Harbinger Show, well, if you're a fan of fascinating podcasts with interesting people, you should definitely check it out. Jordan's a good guy, smart guy, speaks a bunch of languages, has had a lot of life experiences. He's been on the show and has been on with me and Drew as well. There's an episode for everyone, no matter what you're into. He'll talk to Scott Adams about persuasion in a world where facts don't matter. He'll talk to a guy who's an expert in wildlife trafficking. He'll go inside that dark world. You'll always find something useful to apply to your own life, like routine changes to boost productivity or slight mindset tweaks that change how you see the world. We enjoy the show, and I think you're going to enjoy it, too. And you can search it out. The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Piers Morgan, thank you very much for joining us. Good luck in your show.
Pleasure, Adam. Great to talk to you.
Always great to speak to you, my friend. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Piers Morgan saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Porter Adams' new book, Everything Reminds Me of Something, right now at adamcarolla.com. And also get your tickets to see The Ace Man at adamcarolla.com.
You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.